This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
If you're going to be living at the property and you're going to be remaining resident there for some time, then you might think, well, if I'm going to be here for 10 years, fitting solar panels would benefit me, and that's understandable. But if you're doing this property to resell, then, you know, spending out a lot of money for solar panels or, you know, the latest state-of-the-art heating might not be the best way of spending your money.
Welcome to the Property Podcast with Wards and me, Gary Wilson, the monthly podcast where I'll share with you all the latest Kent property news, as well as speaking with industry professionals to offer advice and tips that will hopefully help make your house moving journey a little less stressful. This podcast is brought to you by Wards.
As Kent's local independent estate agent, Wards utilise years of experience and expertise to promote your property in the best possible light to the largest possible audience. For more information, receive an online valuation in less than 30 seconds or book an in-person appraisal of your property with us today. Head over to wardsofkent.co.uk to find out more about our unique approach.
Welcome to episode 7 of the Property Podcast with Wards. Today we're talking about renovations with our special guest, Jonathan Carroll, Branch Development Partner at Wards. Thanks for being with us, Jonathan. Just tell us a little bit about what your role involves, what it is you do.
I've been with Wards now for 27 years. I look after branch in Strood, where I have 10 staff there, and also assist my director in looking after 20 offices in North Kent, and help with the day-to-day running of that, and still get involved in valuations and getting my hands dirty with negotiations, and as well as obviously helping development with staff. So good fun.
Okay, so every aspect really of buying and selling property, which is exactly what we need. So as talking about renovations then, obviously you can't put on the TV without there being a renovation happening on a channel somewhere not too far away. But what are the essential steps that homeowners should take before even starting a renovation project?
So assuming that you've done your research, you've had your surveys done, you've done all the sort of preliminary investigations, I think the thing to consider is, what do you start first? Look at the important jobs that need doing, because I think, you know, ultimately the property needs to be watertight. You know, look at that roof, the walls, the windows. Don't start ripping out kitchens and bathrooms until you understand that the structure of the property is sound. So often those things can catch you out. You know, you do all these jobs and realise that you've got a leak in the roof and it's just going to ruin that lovely new bathroom or kitchen that you've just replaced. So just make sure that you look at the important structural jobs first and have a works schedule. Have a specific budget and timescale in mind. So you need to be looking at completing tasks at certain points. I've had many people that have done a beautiful job on the property. It's a mid-terraced house with no side access. And then they've realised they've got to landscape the garden, and the only way of getting 4 tonnes of earth out of the property is over their lovely new carpets. So make sure that you plan a schedule of works that makes sense. Top-down sometimes is a good way to look at it, and a specific budget and timescale in mind, yeah.
Yeah. Now, one thing you can do, you can put in a lovely bathroom, let's say, or a lovely kitchen, you know, top spec, beautiful stuff, beautifully fitted, high quality, but it's just not the trend of the moment. It's gone out of fashion. Yeah, and whilst it might have cost you X amount of pounds, actually no one really wants to buy a kitchen or a bathroom that has that, that looks like that right now. So what are some of the innovative design trends at the moment when it comes to renovating a home?
I think because trends are changing on a regular basis and everyone has their own opinions, you've got to, I suppose, look at it from the point of view of the market you're looking to go for, because ultimately, you know, you need to be thinking, is this going to be a property for a first-time buyer? Is it a family home? Is it an executive home? So you've got to think about what's going to work right, what's going to be functional for that type of buyer that you're going for. You know, open plan light spaces have always been, certainly in recent years, something that people, you know, enjoy, that you're linking into the outdoor space. So, you know, your sort of, you know, your bifold doors are all very sort of, you know, now to a certain degree, but look at trends, look at going to the Ideal Home exhibition, look at properties that may have already been developed and sold. If you're gaining or you've hopefully started to form a good relationship with a local agent or some local agents, certainly they might be able to show you some properties that have sold recently that have just been developed and how much they sold for and to what type of buyer they're sold with. Don't be also concerned with colours. I mean, obviously, you know, if you're painting white, that's going to be pretty safe. You can add a few splashes of colour with soft furnishings and blinds and things like that. You know, you can add a little bit of your own personality if you wanted to. But if you, I think, play it fairly safe with simple neutral colours, white is probably the way to go. If you're looking at new homes as well, if you look at some of the developers locally to where you're looking to buy, you know, you'll be able to get some ideas there as well, just by going to have a look at a new development and talking to them as well. I think there's lots of information that you can glean online. The Ideal Home exhibition, you can get some probably quite sort of fresh, new cutting, you know, edge ideas, but you've got to be aware of what market you're appealing to. You know, if you're doing a first-time buyer's home, you know, they're not probably going to be wanting to pay for granite worktops, for example. But if you're doing a five-bedroom executive home, then you'll probably want to be putting in that all-body shower and and the latest technology, you know. Yeah. So it's cutting the cloth accordingly, depending on what market you're going for.
Talking of technology, how can people integrate smart home technology now? Smart homes is all the thing, and the automation and that kind of stuff into their renovation projects. How do they go about that? How do they know it's the right thing to do? At what level? How much stuff? All that kind of thing.
Again, comes down to appealing to a specific market. I mean, obviously, there's lots of gadgets and gizmos and apps that you can have now. You know, Hive, for example, is a very common one for your heating, where you can change your heating on your app. Alexa, Google, you know, have all got the ability to link in with systems that can adjust your lighting and heating in home. Although I don't suppose it's really, I would say, something we're coming across as to be expected. I think a lot of people do like to see that a bit of thought and a bit of time has been taken to you know, sort of put these things in. So whilst I don't think it's essential, I do think you need to be giving it some consideration, because it's those little touches that sometimes, you know, could impress a buyer over and above maybe another property that they've looked at.
Mm. And the technology moves on so quickly as well, whereas maybe even as short a time as 10 years ago, most things would have had to have been hardwired in to receive Wi-Fi signals and all that stuff. Now,
absolutely,
you can buy a bulb that talks to your phone directly for a couple of quid. So, yeah, you could do little things that would really quite impress someone coming into a home. With all the electrics going in on those kind of things as well, how can people make sure that their renovation projects are energy efficient and sustainable? Obviously, that's a big thing nowadays as well. And I guess laws and regulations are only going to get greener through time. So how can people make sure they're kind of ahead of that curve and thinking about what money is going to be spent on those things moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, there are many ways in which you can, new ways you can insulate your home, the latest materials, you know, in terms of heating your home, air source recovery, heat pumps, and very efficient electric boilers. There is a lot of information out there. I think probably wise to start with your local authority, because sometimes the local planning office or local authority can sort of point you in the right direction. I think the thing to consider is just to again look at your spend, because, you know, this is a home you're buying as a project and maybe to sell on, obviously. So think about how much you're going to spend, because some of these new ways in which you can be more energy efficient certainly are very helpful. But if you're going to be living at the property and you're going to be remaining resident there for some time, then you might think, well, if I'm going to be here for 10 years, fitting solar panels would benefit me, and that's understandable. But if you're doing this property to resell, then, you know, spending out a lot of money for solar panels or, you know, the latest state-of-the-art heating might not be the best way of spending your money.
It's whether you're thinking about
you know, where to go with that. But certainly insulating your loft is one of the biggest things that you can do to minimize heat loss. windows, triple glazing, the latest windows, again, can make a significant difference to heat loss, and also keeping your property cool as well, actually, in the hotter summers that we're now experiencing.
Yeah.
So there are more efficient ways now than having to spend tens of thousands of pounds, you know, on the latest boilers and so on and so forth. So, yeah.
Well, as we talk about modern stuff, obviously going back in time, older houses were built differently, some of them very well, some not so much, but all of them very differently to how buildings are built and to the specs they're built today. What are the big challenges for people who might be renovating an older property?
Older properties, more often than not, don't particularly have very good ventilation, typically, you know, older Victorian properties, so they may suffer from dry or wet rot, damp, you know, can be an issue. So you need to be very aware, and obviously we've talked previously about making sure you get a survey and you investigate these things as much as possible so you know who you're dealing with. Also check where a property's built. I mean, certain properties will be built in different areas that might typically suffer from subsidence. A local agent can tell you if there's been any issues with that property previously. Check the history. Sellers are obliged to legally inform you of any issues that they might have had with the property previously, any insurance claims, or if it suffered from subsidence, if it's been underpinned. So make sure these, you know, questions are being asked when you're buying a property that is older and clearly in need of considerable structural changes or work. Also check if the property has had any certification of any works that have been carried out previously. So, you know, that's important to consider. Obviously, heating, electrics, anything like that, it's important to get an idea of if there's anything that's been done there in the past. But on the basis that the property needs complete refurbishment and that's clearly something that needs to be replaced, then I think just go in with your eyes wide open and making sure that you are taking professional advice and digging a little bit deeper, because a lot of things can be missed, you know, without good investigation.
Something with older properties as well is that people can get a bit gung-ho when it comes to ripping things out. And sometimes it's just worth having a little think. Might not be to your taste, but would someone really value that fireplace, that bit of cornicing, that kind of stuff? Particularly with period properties, obviously, those things are the things that a lot of buyers are really looking for. So I know from past experience, that's something that might be a thing as well. It can be as important as something you don't do as much as something you do do. So when it comes to renovations, what are the most common mistakes that you've experienced in your time?
Many people can go over budget. And interestingly, when we've seen house prices increase, certainly over the last sort of 20 years, where we've seen some huge increases in property value, people have gone in and not really given much consideration to budget, and still been fortunate due to the rising property values that they've still actually managed to get away with it and make a profit. Yeah, of course we're not in that market at the moment. It's a slightly more challenging market. So many people I've seen have cut corners as well, and maybe rather than just replastering, they've thought, well, we'll give that a lick of paint and that'll be all right. Only then to the paint to start sort of, you know, flaking off, and the cracks literally showing.
Yeah.
And it's been a bit of a disaster. Not gaining correct certification, that's something that comes up quite a lot. So, you know, if someone's decided to do a garage renovation or a conversion, they haven't got building regulation, or they've got their mate Bob, I'm sure he's a very good electrician.
But he's all right, Bob.
He's not certificated, unfortunately.
He can't get you a certificate.
No. So yes, when the buyer's done the survey and the solicitor's asked for the necessary you know, certification, that can't be provided, that's going to hold up, obviously, the sale. Yeah, those are, I think, common mistakes. It's going over budget, not getting the correct certification and cutting corners. So those are things that come up quite often.
Excellent. With the budget thing, how can people keep control? What good advice and tips have you got for keeping control of budgets and finances generally as you go into one of these projects?
Have a plan. I think that's the most important thing. So you've got your budget of what you're able to spend. Hopefully you've got your 10% contingency over the top in case something does go wrong, and invariably probably will go wrong. So have a plan of works. Break down the specific jobs that are required. So understand what's going to need to be done, and when is it probably the best time for that to be carried out. I think I mentioned before, you know, don't come right to the end of the job and realise that you've got to move 7 tonnes of earth from the back garden to the front garden because you've got no rear access and you've completely renovated the inside and it's going to pretty much muck up literally everything you've done. Obtain professional quotes for works that can't be completed by yourself. So before you even start, you know, get that electrician in, get that plumber in, get the plaster in, understand the cost and when they can do it. Because again, timing as well, tradespeople are not easy to find. We've talked previously about making sure you use someone that's recommended, someone that's got good Trustpilot or Google reviews, and understand when they can start the job. Because quite often, sometimes good tradespeople might not be able to start the job for 6 months, which, you know, obviously is going to really backfire your potential plan. So that's important. Make sure the amount that you borrow covers not just your cost, but that contingency that we've mentioned so many times, because borrowing on a credit card, you know, to finish off the kitchen is going to be expensive and it's going to add pressure that you just don't need. So, you know, overcompensate, because there'd be nothing more satisfying than completing the project within budget or even under budget. And of course, don't forget you've got things like mortgage payments to take into consideration. So you're doing a project, you have got to think, well, if it doesn't sell in 6 months' time, if I've still got this property in 12 months, how's that going to work? How's that going to look? How much is that going to eat into my budget? And then, as again, I think I mentioned before, maybe consider a potential exit plan. Could you rent the property out for a period of time to give you a bit of breathing space? So, yeah, all things to probably consider.
Yeah, lots there. Legal and regulatory considerations as well. Kind of touched on them there, but what should people have in mind as they go through the process?
And speaking to your local authority, just to make sure any necessary planning permissions that may be required, you know, you can obviously look at that, building regulations for alterations, taking out walls, creating, you know, different spaces within a property might still require building regulation. If you're altering the structure of the property or you're adding accommodation, that's almost definitely probably going to be needed. But these things aren't problems. It can be a quick call, a quick email, and you tend to find that the local authority can be very helpful with this. Also to consider even things if you're changing windows, particularly if you're buying a property that might be in a conservation area or it might be a listed property. Just things like changing the windows sometimes will need consent from a conservation officer. Lots of people have gone gung-ho and bought this beautiful listed cottage and have got ideas of what they want to do, and you know they can't actually do what they think they can do, and then they're into problems. You know, yeah. They have to replace those windows, unfortunately, with oak frame windows and not UPVC, and that can obviously kick up some issues. So that's things to consider as well.
And it's almost always better to find out ahead of time than afterwards, because, you know, you're dealing with anyone. If you've got people and you're dealing up front with them and you say, we want to be happy, what do I need to do? I shall do that then. Thank you very much. It's a lot easier conversation than, oh, I'm sorry, but I did that. It's a lot easier to have that conversation the first way around. It really is.
Ask our expert.
Right, time for our ask our expert question. Jonathan, that is you. So this is from one of our listeners. Do you have any tips or advice for homeowners who want to live in their homes during the renovation process? I imagine this is happening more than ever before as everything gets more expensive, as mortgages get more expensive. It's just everything at the moment, it would seem. There's going to be more and more people that are going to have to get rid of one property and get into the one they're working on. So what have you got for us on that front?
I would personally recommend, do not live in your renovation project. From personal experience.
Yes. It's not ideal, I think that's what we're saying. But if it does, and it does happen, and sometimes it does have to happen, what way around can we make things better?
I just drawing on my personal experience there, I'm moving lots of things around and not actually spending the time that I should be spending on carrying out the works I need to do. But anyway,
and the word dust becomes your most used word.
Oh, yes, yeah, indeed it does, amongst other four-letter words,
yes.
But we won't go there.
No, dust is the only one we're allowed on the podcast, Jonathan.
So ask yourself, can you live with any family member or relative somewhere temporarily without any additional cost? that's got to be a consideration.
Yeah. Okay.
However, if this is not possible, consider that you need, obviously, you know, running water and washing facilities, at least one clean, dust-free room which you can live in comfortably to give you a bit of respite. So I remember using some plastic polythene and some gaffer tape just to actually seal up the door during the project.
Yeah,
because
been there.
You're absolutely right, the dust is horrendous. You don't realise until you get stuck in. So having an area, or maybe ideally two rooms, in which you can relax maybe at the end of the day and be as dust-free as possible. Finally, one aspect overlooked in renovation, and I've alluded to this actually already a few times, outside space. A lot of people do forget about the garden, and I think nowadays more than ever, with the weather we seem to be having people like to have that outside space. A lot of people doing some really I've got fresh ideas about using that outside space. It's not just, you know, a few slabs on a patio anymore. You've got, you know, sort of these big verandas and sails and lots of outdoor, you know, different furniture and different outdoor ideas that people are sort of using and enjoying. And I think take into consideration with the renovation project what you can do outside. A landscape garden can often add a considerable amount of value to the project, and it could be the difference between whether someone buys that house or not. So if you've got a well-planned garden, doesn't matter how big it is, but if it's suitably organised for some outdoor living, seating, cooking, then that can be a real big plus and add some considerable value.
Yeah. And if you've got time, one bit of advice I would get, saving a few quid doing your landscaping, grass seed rather than turf. Takes a while to get there. It's more of a faff. Seriously, it'll save you a ton of cash if you can manage
Absolutely.
To do grass seed.
100%.
Excellent stuff. Before we come to the end of this month's episode, how can homeowners strike a balance between something you touched on there, the personal style that people always want to bring to any renovation? Particularly, they might not know if they are going to stay there, or they are then going to rent it or do it up and move on, and something that will appeal to the biggest possible audience. How can people strike a balance there? It's one of the things you see if, like me, you watch a lot of TV property shows. People say, oh, but I love bright purple window frames. You know, some people
yeah,
do,
yeah, yeah,
but not everyone. How do you strike that balance?
Again, I think we've touched upon it already, but consider the market which you are appealing to. And if it's a property that's predominantly for first-time buyers, it's got to be functional. And those little touches, like we mentioned earlier, you know, the heating that's controlled by your app or the lighting, you know, those actually aren't too expensive. And those are nice little touches that, you know, maybe a younger couple or persons would appreciate. But there's no point putting in, you know, your full body jet shower or, you know, the really expensive Italian tiling, because that's going to add cost, but not necessarily value, in respect that, you know, your first-time buyer typically isn't going to probably necessarily appreciate that or want to pay for that. They want something that's functional, that it's within their budget, that they can afford. So be aware of the market that you're going into and understand, you know, who you're going to be selling to. And again, ask your local agents what people would be expecting, looking at other properties that are currently on the market in the price range you're looking to sell at, and what do they have? What do they offer? Could you do something with your project that's just going to give your property a bit of an edge over what's available for sale at the moment? Bear in mind, you don't need to necessarily spend a lot of money to achieve that.
Because that is that fine line, isn't it, between putting something in that make yours better than next door's without having spent X amount of pounds that you're never going to get back, because exactly. There's a ceiling price, and that's that.
Yeah.
That's the cutoff. Fantastic stuff. So everyone, don't forget, it's always a good idea to consult with a financial advisor, solicitor, or estate agent, or all three, to help you navigate the home buying process and answer any additional questions you will almost certainly have. Thanks again to our special guest, Jonathan Carroll, Branch Development Partner at Wards, for sharing all his knowledge and expertise with us today. And you can check out all our previous episodes of our property podcast at im-listening.co.uk. Don't forget to check out the property podcast with Wards next month as well. See you then, and make sure you hit the subscribe button. Thanks for listening to the Property Podcast with Wards. If you'd like more information on the subjects that we've covered in today's episode, just head over to the Wards website at wardsofkent.co.uk, Or you can follow us on our social media channels. You can check out our latest episodes at www.im-listening.co.uk or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.